Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England. What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back to another episode.
Thank you for joining us on this beautiful, beautiful day. At least I hope so, because, you know, global warming has not been kind to us as of late. So I hope you guys are doing well and enjoying, hopefully, decent weather as we approach springtime. Finally.
And that's crazy.
I'm gonna enjoy these nice last few weeks of not boiling hot weather, because we all know that I hate it. I hate the summertime so much. It's fine. I'll get over it. Anyway. Our episode today involves a case of really family annihilation in the worst way, because it involves children.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how we feel about the murder of children. I think similarly to how everyone feels about the murder of children, very negatively. And doing the research for this case was intense because there's a lot of tiny details that come about, and it's very intense.
Definitely stick around, you guys. It is very timeline-based, so we will take you through all of the events of the case leading up to it, the investigation, and finding the children.
Yeah, it's luckily, we have a conclusion, so it's very fascinating to hear all the details of somebody's mind, kind of as they decide to make such a sick decision. I mean, how can you even make a decision like this, really, is how, honestly, the discussion of this episode, because it's like, deciding to take the lives of your own children is just so fucked up. Something that even us, as people who don't have children, can't even comprehend. Because, wow, it's just awful.
Definitely. And big thank you to Julie D, who suggested this to us via email.
Thank you, Julie D. We appreciate you very much, because this is quite the case. And without further ado, today we will be covering Manuel Gehring. All right, Katie, before we get into it, I would love if I could hear all of your sources today.
Of course.
Thank you.
I had information from WTOL.com, GoUpstate.com, The New York Times, Narchive News Group's Archive, Cape Cod Times, WUNC.org, which is an article on the podcast Criminal and their coverage on the case, as well as the episode from the Criminal podcast titled Finding Sarah and Philip. Highly recommend listening.
Wow.
And Seacoast Online.
Great. Criminal with Phoebe Judge?
Yes.
Fantastic. What a great podcast. That is a great resource. I used an article from Seacoast Online. I used the True Crime Discussions blog, GoUpstate.com, the Cape Cod Times, Tapatalk.com, and the New York Times. All very interesting resources. I scoured. The Tapatalk was this 16-page, like, document compilation, I guess you could say. So from the very beginning, like first articles about this case to the very end. So I was like reading through it like, oh my God. So people were posting like, it was a lot of duplicate articles, but a lot from different places all over the country. It was very interesting. So I saw a lot of different perspectives.
Cool.
Which helped my research too, and kind of like pieced things together. So I really liked it. And I've used Tapatalk before, so it's very Web Sleuth-esque. Not so much Reddit-esque, but Web Sleuth-esque, if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you. All right. Per usual, let's get into the story by kind of setting the scene with the foundation of this family that we're talking about here, and who Manuel Gehring is, or was, rather. Unfortunately, there isn't a ton of information on the antagonist of our story and how he met the mother of his beautiful children and also his victims, but we can piece together little bits from various sources. Again, a lot of it I got from that Tapa talk, so we know little bits about him and really what happened in the interim. Manuel, or as he was often known, Manny Gehring, was born in Nicaragua and was actually an orphan before he was adopted by a U.S. government official and brought over to America, where he ultimately grew up. At some point in his life, he attended a boarding school in Vermont, which is perhaps how he ended up in this corner of the country. I'm not really sure if he was brought over from Nicaragua just over the border or what, but he ended up in Vermont. Some sources speculate that Manny met his future wife, Terry Knight, at this boarding school in 1979. Of note, Manny would be 20 years old at this time, so it's unlikely that this timeline matches up. However, it is of course possible that he did meet Terry at this boarding school. It just seems unlikely that they met at this exact year because, again, he would be 20 years old. I don't know. Maybe it was a college and they didn't mean boarding school. I'm unsure. But however it was, he did attend a boarding school in Vermont. Manny and Terry ended up getting married in 1985, and they eventually settled in Concord, New Hampshire. Together, the pair had two children, beautiful Sarah, and then roughly 3 years later, little Philip. And there's this picture that's everywhere. Like, it's the same picture every time. And I wish it wasn't, because it's the two kids and Manny. And I hate that, because you can't crop them out, really. But they are like twins. They look very similar. Big brown eyes. They're very cute. And they look so innocent. Because they were. At the time of this incident, Sarah was 14 and Philip was only 11. They were just little kids.
That picture will be up on our website and social media, minus Manny.
Yes.
Them two side by side, as it should be, without
yes.
him.
Yes. They were just sweet little angel babies. They really were. Manny was a CPA as his career, except it was known to those around him that he could not keep a job for the life of him. And I wonder if it was because he was a piece of garbage. It seemed as though he never stayed at a job for much longer than like 2 years. Terry, who was later interviewed about this, said it had a lot to do with his, quote, distrust in companies and the managers that ran them, and that he often felt he was being discriminated against. Now, sure, this is possible, but there's no evidence literally anywhere to suggest that he was ever being discriminated against in literally any workplace setting. Most people who knew Manny described him as being uninvolved and controlling, especially Terry, who knew him to be abusive and honestly kind of terrible. There was an incident in 1991 where Manny knocked a pregnant Terry down to the ground and gave her a bloodied lip. Terry did initially press charges, but she did eventually drop them for whatever reason. Fear, the fact that she was pregnant with his child and needed his help, could be whatever reason. I feel terrible for her that she felt she had to do that, you know, to drop those charges. It is no secret that their marriage wasn't good, as evidenced by what I just told you, the physical abuse there. And even if this physical abuse only happened that one time, doesn't matter. He was not kind to her. He was controlling and just not a good person. And at the end of the day, he could not keep a job, and he didn't seem to be invested in the kids' lives at all. And so in 2001, the couple was divorced. This started a custody battle for the two estranged parents, and at first, Manny didn't seem to fight that hard. And it wasn't until Terry got married to her new boyfriend in 2003 that Manny suddenly seemed to put on a big show and perform as, well, father of the year. Which, I don't know, Katie, have I done an okay job kind of persuading the listeners that maybe he wasn't exactly father of the year?
I think you've made it very clear, if there's any question leading up to this point, it will be dismantled soon enough.
Mm. I don't think there will be any question.
I sure hope not.
Because he just... And as we go along, man, it's... You wonder how people like this end up having even the opportunity to procreate. Especially with someone as lovely as Terry. Because we will obviously talk about her much more, but she is such a lovely woman. And she very much loved her children. And it's at no fault to her that what happened, of course, happened. And it's like, she fought for her children every day. And I know she hated the fact that their dad was their dad, you know. Oh, I just feel for her so bad. Especially during this custody disagreement as well, because her kids wanted to be with her as well. And in the eyes of the law, doesn't matter what the kids want. Sometimes the kids are really just disregarded. It's awful. I hate it.
This custody agreement, when they were trying to figure out, you know, how do we appease Manny? Manny is all of a sudden involved and all of a sudden interested in his kids' lives. He had reached out to a counselor to try and come up with a different agreement. And he wrote about how it was his responsibility to rise to the occasion and help protect and nurture his kids. I think over the course of Sarah's 14 years and Philip's 11 years, he's had plentiful opportunities to rise to the occasion, but okay. He also told the counselor that they went out to dinner weekly with the kids to get Chinese food.
Mm.
Big spender over here.
Yeah.
He played computer games with his son and had heart-to-heart talks with his daughter.
I'm sorry. When I was 14, and I love my dad very much, I was most certainly not having heart-to-hearts with my dad. That's weird.
Right, and you guys had a good relationship.
Yes. At 14, you see, thinking about talking about a deep conversation with your dad makes you go, ew, there's no way. That's just being a teenager.
Sarah's boyfriend at the time later told police that Manuel and Sarah frequently argued, and it was more so that Manuel was arguing with Sarah, like picking fights with her. She would just kind of be existing in that space, and he would like berate her, where have you been, where are you going, da 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 da, tell me everything. And at one point, Sarah was sick, and Manny hit her across the face because she was making too much noise.
Oh, that's awful.
Sarah's boyfriend's father literally avoided Manny because he was so aggressive and in your face about knowing Sarah's location at all times. The boyfriend's father was a school administrator and stated, quote, I deal with parents every single day, and I think that the professional term for this gentleman would be crackerhead. Because he's so, like, off the wall.
Yeah. He's right.
None of his coworkers thought highly of him. He really did not, like you said, Liz, take any interest in these kids until Terry moved in with the man she ended up marrying. And at this point, Terry was pregnant and expecting twins, which was so exciting.
Yeah.
Sarah and Philip were really excited, like little brother, little sister, two little babies. That's really exciting. We're so happy for you, Mom. We're so glad that you're happy.
Yeah.
Manuel was at the point where he never really remembered the kids' birthdays. When it was his job to pick them up from school or extracurricular activities, he was always late, and not just by a couple minutes, like always egregiously late. Like, these kids were probably the last ones standing there, and everybody else had long gone.
Yeah.
At one time, he spelled Sarah's name wrong on a birthday card.
That's atrocious.
Sarah.
Yeah. So I imagine he probably forgot the H, right? How else?
How do you fuck up spelling that? Like, that just proves that he could not give two shits about these kids.
No.
And he only wants in on their life when his ex-wife, Terry, is now happy.
Right. So while this was happening, Manny had remained in Concord, New Hampshire, where they had settled. And it turned out, while Terry had moved to Hillsborough with her new boyfriend slash eventual husband, he ended up having more time with the children throughout the week than Terry did anyway, but he was still trying to fight for full custody. So it was weird how he was just trying and trying and trying. It just did not make sense. So it was like, no matter what he did, he was doing everything he could to break her down. And let's be real, there was no way on this earth he was going to win full custody because Terry was a perfectly normal, healthy, functioning adult. There was no way. So it just wasn't going to work out that way like he wanted. And that's perfectly fine with me and everyone else in the world. So on June 24th, 2003, Manny and Terry signed a mediated agreement after a long custody battle. And that agreement said that Sarah and Philip would go to school in Concord at Manny's house, but would spend at least 2 to 3 days and nights each week at their mother's house in Hillsborough. And unfortunately, this meant Manny won because it was like a 60-40 split. And Sarah didn't really want to live with her dad. I mean, because what we kind of learn after is that he was being terrible to her. But it largely had to do, also, she wanted to stay in her old school with her boyfriend, is what a part of it was, and I don't blame her. You know, you're 14, you know. It's cute. I like it. But regardless, he had won, and that was that. So, a few days after they had signed this agreement, things were just going as they were, and Manny, again, he had won. He called Terry and said, essentially, by the way, I do not plan to abide by this agreement. Sorry. And that was that. And Terry recalls him sounding angry. And she was like, what the fuck is happening right now? Like, what? What? And that was around the beginning of July. And she was like, what is happening right now? This guy's a piece of crap. Like, he's the worst father, as is. Couldn't even spell our daughter's name right. And he won. Like, why is he fighting me so bad? And little did she know that so shortly after that, everything was going to change regardless.
On July 4th, 2003, Manuel took Sarah and Philip to attend a holiday fireworks show in Concord, New Hampshire, and witnesses said later that they saw the kids and Manuel fighting and arguing, especially with Sarah. Like, Sarah was crying and just kind of going back and forth, and Philip was really upset, and Sarah was just very visibly upset, so much so that witnesses were taking notice.
Yeah.
You know, like, who is yelling and screaming with their kids at a holiday fireworks show on the 4th of July?
Right.
And witnesses saw the family eventually go into Manny's minivan and drive away.
Yeah. Now, 2 days later, Terry had stopped by Manny's condo to pick up Philip because he was supposed to start, like, a summer camp that day. Nobody was home, so she waited. And in fact, she waited all day. And nobody ever came home. So, naturally, because she is a good parent, unlike her ex-husband, she went to the police and reported Sarah and Philip missing because this was very bizarre, and Manny most certainly knew that Philip was starting a summer camp that day, so he was expecting her. And that's when, well, this whole thing kind of unraveled very slowly, because it turns out those people, those witnesses who saw Manny yelling at Sarah and arguing with her and then taking the two kids in the car and leaving on that July 4th night, that was the last time anyone would see them alive.
After Terry reported the kids missing, police, you know, she's telling them everything. She's like, I'm really scared that I haven't really heard from him, and I didn't really like this whole thing to begin with, and it's just really bizarre, and I hope my kids are okay because he's been abusive to me in the past and emotionally abusive to the kids. You know, I don't like this thing at all. And even if the police were like, okay, these are all allegations, none of this is true, what is true is that Manny was now violating their custody agreement.
100%.
So police are like, okay, let's find out where he is. Like, we need to figure this out. And they tracked his ass down on July 10th, 2003, in Gilroy, California.
Yeah. So, because of this whole custody agreement thing, they were like, what's going on here? And they were able to find his credit card and ATM withdrawals. And they were able to track him over 3,200 miles across the country, where he, after he had left, clearly with Sarah and Philip, just completely booked it out west. So obviously it was July 4th where he was seen at the fireworks display fighting with Sarah and taking both the crying children into the van and then disappearing. On July 5th, thanks to credit card receipts and ATM withdrawals, the family car stopped in Newburgh, New York, and Emlenton, Pennsylvania. On July 6th, the family car passed through Joliet, Illinois, in Iowa City, Iowa. July 7th, the family car made its way through Greenwood, Nebraska, and then on July 8th, Winnemucca and Sparks, Nevada. July 9th, they were tracked to Rockland, North Highlands, and also San Francisco, California. And finally, on July 10th, the final stop of this crazy, sporadic trip, like you said, Katie, was in Gilroy, California. By the time that the authorities were able to pick up on Manny's credit card transactions and ATM withdrawals, they were finally on his tail. And so when he was checking into this hotel in Gilroy, California, they pounced on him immediately and they got him. And they were like, yo, what are you doing out here, you fucking weirdo? And when they found him, they also made another really terrifying discovery. And that was the lack of Sarah and Philip's presence. They were nowhere to be found. It wasn't 2 days later that it was announced to the public that it was believed that the missing children were victims of double homicide. When police had arrested Manny in California, they searched his van, and they made some gruesome discoveries. They first found two guns, as well as bullet fragments and bullet holes, and they also found a shovel. But what they also found, which was more disturbing, was a significant amount of blood, and there was also some evidence of brain matter, which I think is the most horrifying thing of all.
6 days later, on July 18th, Manny was indicted on 2 counts of first-degree murder. Police said that Manny pulled over on their way home from the fireworks show, shot both of the children in the car, drove with them, their bodies, in the car, across the country. As we know, his journey was over several days.
Yeah.
And mind you, this is in July.
Yeah.
And, of course, we know his purchases that he made, and one of the purchases he made at a pit stop in Pennsylvania was where he bought a shovel.
Yeah.
And the shovel was found in the car.
It sure was.
So we can theorize that at some point, like, we know that he murdered his children in the car in or around Concord, New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
is driving all over the country, 3,200 miles across the country. They find him in California, no children, but there's a shovel.
Okay.
They were able to determine, and determine is a pretty strong word, but they were able to determine that Manny buried the bodies of his children somewhere from New Hampshire to California.
Well, yeah, that's easy. 3,200 miles they had to comb for these children along Interstate 80, roughly. Obviously, this was going to be the longest, worst, most awful, tedious search ever. Because they could literally be anywhere. So obviously, Manny was arrested in California. Now it was kind of like a battle to get him back to New Hampshire, where it was speculated he had killed the children. So the charges wouldn't hold up in California. They would be needed to be followed through with in New Hampshire. Same with the custody agreement charges. So now he had 2 charges of interfering with custody and 2 charges of murder because he had basically all but admitted that he killed these kids. And to nobody's surprise, Manny's behavior was, well, bizarre. He was compliant. He gave vague information. But according to his lawyer, he seemed somber but lucid. Additionally, Manny waived the extradition proceedings, which allowed for him to be brought back to New Hampshire quickly. Of course, the whole New Hampshire to California, everyone was like hearing about this story because this man disappeared with his kids, showed up all the way across the country, and the kids were not there. So now a whole bunch of cities and states were like, these kids could be right under our noses. okay, so this is now interesting to me because it's relevant, you know? People were watching his every move. Now, it was time to kind of exactly reverse what they had just discovered, how Manny got to California, reverse it and see where those kids were. So on Tuesday, July 15th, Manny got on a plane to head back to New Hampshire, but by that Friday, he still had not returned to New Hampshire. Because it turns out that flight had stopped in the Midwest along the route he had taken across the country with his murdered children in the backseat of his van. And like you said, Katie, July, hot, baking in that car, I feel so bad. And I wonder, how was he not stopped? When people are deceased, they look deceased. Their skin tone, the rigidity of their bodies. After a certain amount of time, there's putrefaction, there's swelling. We'll find later about their autopsies, how they were killed, how often they were shot, where they were shot. How was that not obvious? Like what? Blows my mind. It is speculated that the authorities got Manny all the way back to Pennsylvania, where he bought that shovel, and then drove him back out west, heading along the route he took, and back through Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, and Indiana. So they had him going exactly where he had gone the week prior, but this time he was under the guise of the police. And then investigators announced some major details. Well, kind of major, thought could be helpful, and then it seemed like it really wasn't all that helpful. Manny had given several vague landmarks and descriptions as to where he thought he may have hidden, buried the bodies. The authorities begged the public to go around their towns and see if they recognized any of these markers. Manny's landmarks of the burial site included. And again, this is what Manny provided. He said he couldn't remember where he buried the bodies. He wasn't paying attention. He just, one day, just pulled over and buried them. Okay, I'm sure he was lying about that, but whatever. This is what he said was around the burial site. 5 to 6 cement cylinders that were 4 feet in both diameter and height. A 6-foot fence immediately surrounding the area in a rectangular pattern. A mound of gray and white rocks. An old-fashioned silver and green hand lever water pump. A cement slab laying on the ground, roughly 4 to 5 feet in diameter. A handful of large shady trees, like willows, with droopy limbs, an eroding embankment. Additionally, the authorities, based off information from Manny, believe the children's bodies were buried together and most likely within 10 miles of I-80, which seems pretty promising considering that's largely the route he followed. After several weeks of intense searches, and including new information with the potential burial site identifiers, the police announced to the public that they had narrowed down their search. Jay Fallon, who was an FBI supervisor in New Hampshire, announced that they were now focusing on a 190-mile-long strip of Interstate 80 stretching from the Ohio and Indiana border to Joliet, Illinois. Now, that's a long stretch, but it sure is a lot shorter than 3,200 miles. So that changes some things. And then, of course, to entice anyone with information, the police offered a $5,000 reward. Okay. And then Jay Fallon, this FBI supervisor, released information about the approach to the site, in which he provided this information. Exit I-80 westbound and make a right turn onto a 2-lane road. Take another right turn onto another 2-lane road. He believed the road could run parallel to I-80 and could have either a solid or dotted yellow line down the center. On the right side of the roadway is an opening with tall grass, roughly 3 to 4 feet tall. He said it could be green at the bottom, tan at the top, with like seeds sprouting at the end. Downhill slope from the roadway, and then an uphill slope to the opening in the grass. Okay. Yeah. So vague. If you've ever been to the Midwest, that's literally just the Midwest. It's all that. So it's very confusing, very vague, and it's like, okay, what the hell? Like, none of this is going to help. Especially when it's 190 miles of searching. Even 10 miles is like, okay, we'll do our best to find a field with tall grass.
Right, and it just shows the complete and utter disregard that this man had for his children. Like, I'm sorry, you couldn't even think to pay attention to the exit that you took? That just tells me how little he cared about these children, and he probably just was like, all right, I gotta get rid of their bodies, they're starting to smell or whatever, like, I gotta pull over, let's just do it, I'll do it in the middle of the night, whatever. Not paying attention, not caring to pay attention.
Yeah.
Really just wanting to be done and then going the rest of the way to California.
Yeah.
Piece of shit. Obviously he's a piece of shit, but this really just hits home. And then the whole cryptic description, underneath branches drooping like a willow tree and tall grass, and go fuck yourself.
Yeah, it's very vague, very nonchalant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sad. And then, obviously, these investigators were getting a lot of information, and how they were getting it from Manny was unclear, because his lawyer had specified in several public interviews that his client had agreed to help with the investigation, but not until he was back in New Hampshire and with the lawyer present. So, a majority of this information seemed to come out while Manny was being brought along this route, you know, taken throughout the Midwest with the police and without his lawyer. So his lawyer was like, okay, these guys shouldn't even be talking to Manny. They should just be asking him, like, when he needs to go to the bathroom and, like, okay, are you comfortable back there? Like, you know, the basic human rights. So it was like, why are you taking him along at all? Just to sit there and stare blankly? Like, and oh, if he blinks a little fast in this direction, that might mean something? I just don't get it. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then by the time he made it back to New Hampshire to face charges, he had spent an entire week in the Midwest with investigators, and that meant that it had now been over 2 weeks, almost nearing three, since Philip and Sarah had been murdered. And we all know how important timelines are here in the true crime world and missing people, even though we almost all certainly know for a fact at this point, without proving it, that they are dead. When Manny returned to New Hampshire on July 23rd, 2003, he was arraigned on the charge of interfering with child custody, and he was ordered held on $250,000 bond. On July 24th, the very next day, Manny pled not guilty in the first-degree murder charges of both of his children, and he was held without bail. His public defender, Barbara Keshen, described Manny as a devoted father who loved his children. And she stated this is something she actually said out loud at the arraignment. This is true. Quote, there may be perfectly innocent explanations for the events of the last few days. Like what? Give me three. I get it's her job as a public defender, but Jesus Christ.
That's just insulting. That is just a slap in the face to Terry,
mm-hmm.
who is grieving the loss of her children. This is so traumatic for her. She has no idea where her kids' bodies are.
Yeah.
And you're trying to say that there's a perfectly innocent explanation for this? I think there's a perfectly innocent explanation for her being dropped on her head as a child.
Yes.
Because who has the audacity to say that shit? I'm sorry, but yeah. Like, please.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, because that is insulting.
Terry has more class than me, by far, because if I were present during that, I too would be facing charges.
Yes, right?
I will just leave it at that.
Yeah. Oh my god, I'm with you on that one.
On July 30th, a released police affidavit revealed that Manuel had admitted to shooting his children and burying their bodies, which we know he just admitted it. They released the affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
Several months later, he tried telling the papers that the FBI coerced a confession out of him, which, you know, coercion, very real, used way too often, a brutal police tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Anything could have happened with him being in the car with them during that time.
Sure.
He's still guilty as fuck.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
He told police specifically that he decided to kill the children because their lives were in a, quote, downward spiral because of the custody dispute. Mostly because, of course, at this time, Terry had remarried, she was pregnant with twins, she was so excited, she was thrilled, and it wasn't even really a custody dispute. It was that Terry was like, yeah, you can still see your kids, I guess, and he was like, no, I want more time with the kids, even though I can't spell my own daughter's name and can't tell you when they were born.
Right. He's too greedy.
At this time as well, it was revealed that police had gone through his computer files, and he had a 2-page note that he had written to Sarah where he was berating her, almost to the point of being verbally abusive, berating her for not cleaning the kitchen after she made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
It's ridiculous.
She's a 14-year-old girl. Like, teenagers are a little messy. She made a PB&J, big whoop-de-doo. A 2-page note.
Yeah, come on.
A 2-page note. And then there was also the notes that he had written the counselor saying, like, we go out to Chinese food once a week, and right. I'm rising to the occasion, and no.
Bullshit.
By the end of January 2004, Manny's lawyers revealed that they might try to get an insanity plea for him, which...
He's not insane. He's just a bad person.
Right. He's evil, but he's not insane. He's very much with it, to the point where he was so calculated in driving across the country with his children's bodies in the car. Like, he's... No.
Yeah.
Shortly after this, the union leader asked Manny if he knew where his children were, and he stated, I prefer not to answer that. That sounds like a pretty coherent answer that someone who is mentally sound and aware of both the situation and his rights would say.
Yeah, that sounds like someone who's definitely well-informed and knows not to talk without a lawyer, or at least not to reveal something that important to the union leader.
Correct. Someone who is not insane.
Yeah. Someone who is insane would say something about, like, cream cheese. Like, there's no way. There's just no way. I can't.
Exactly.
I can't.
Exactly. And it's so infuriating.
On February 19th, 2004, Manny was found dead in his jail cell. He had strangled himself. Apparently, it was reported that Manny was accounted for at 11 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. the night before, when he stood up for count. Throughout the night, supposedly he was looked in on at least 2 times, and he was seen to be in bed. At 4:25 a.m. that morning, when Manny's name was called out for count, he didn't move. And when the guards went into his cell, they discovered that he was dead. It is reported by several sources that Manny used a bedsheet to strangle himself, but he did not hang himself. It is also reported that he did not leave a note or anything of the like behind. With Manny dead, the trial obviously was done for. There would be no real justice for Sarah and Philip. And of course, the worst part of all, they still were somewhere out there, buried in shallow graves, killed by their father's hand. But just because their piece of shit father had offed himself like a little pussy boy, it didn't mean that the search of them was going to stop. Because their mom, Terry, now armed with infant twin girls and a happy, supportive husband, was determined to bring her children home. And that's exactly what she was going to do, and she wasn't going to stop until it happened.
Later in 2004, the U.S. Geological Survey did a pollen analysis on soil found underneath Manny's minivan, as well as near the shovel used to bury the children. The analysis came back with the results that the soil was most likely from northeastern Ohio. That kind of technology is always so fascinating to me, like soil analysis, and, you know, there's been a couple cases where they were able to pin a murder on someone because the bugs found in the grill of their car didn't match the area where they said they were, mm-hmm. and it was down in Florida, and this one species is only, like, it's so interesting.
It's crazy.
Once this information came out and they were able to kind of determine that most likely the kids had been buried in northeastern Ohio, Terry, in a plea to the public, stated, quote, "Take some time while the landscape is a little bit less dense than it was last fall. Please check your property. If you're out walking anywhere, just know that Sarah and Philip have not been found." By the next summer of 2005, Terry and her husband and their 2 infant girls traveled along the 700-mile strip of the I-80 to try and find the bodies of her children and bring the case back into the spotlight so they could be found.
And I mean, that's exactly what they did. Everywhere they stopped, reporters were there. People from the cities and towns were there, seeing what was going on, really, for a lot of them, and then finding out what was going on, and then helping out. Because this, of course, touches everyone's hearts. This is a huge deal. It's so sad, and, you know, it was all just so much. And a lot of people, I think, just feel like if they can help in any way, they're gonna. Which I think is one of those things that reminds you there is some good in this world, but it's hard to remember that sometimes, especially when you think back to Manny and what he did.
Correct.
Yeah. Terry told reporters that they had seen some things that did match some of what Manny had said, like those landmarks that he gave, but they were all scattered. Quote, many of the puzzle pieces weren't found in one place, she said, which I can imagine is very frustrating. On July 25th, 2005, a small blip turned out to be false hope when somebody believed they stumbled upon a shallow, unmarked grave after a woman who was actively searching for the kids found it. Cadaver dogs, two German shepherds, were brought in, and they did signal to an area off of I-80. So a 5-foot by 4-foot site was excavated for roughly 2 hours, but nothing came up. This false hope after 2 years was obviously so hard for the family because it was like, maybe it is something. And then cadaver dogs, oh, they reacted. This is insane. Maybe it is something. It was in Ohio, I think. So it was like, oh my God. But then it was nothing. And it was like, oh man, it was just devastating all over again.
44-year-old Stephanie Dietrich, a cashier at the Acme grocery store in Akron, Ohio, heard of this story and heard of Terry's journey across the country, her own search for her children, and she decided to start looking around her town on her own. She would search different areas of northeastern Ohio every few days and did so for the next 6 months. In December of 2005, Stephanie and her dog Rico located the bodies of Sarah and Philip.
Amazing.
They had been buried in an isolated spot on the outskirts of Hudson, Ohio, in a wooded area. The two children had been placed in black trash bags before being buried in shallow graves. The graves had been marked with crosses that Manuel had made from sticks and duct tape. Stephanie stated, "It was the mother's plea that made me do it." Dental records confirmed that the bodies were those of the two children. Autopsy results showed that Sarah had been shot in the head 3 times with a handgun that then jammed, so a second handgun was used to shoot Philip, and he was shot 4 times in the head, neck, and in each arm. The guns had been recovered during Manuel's arrest. Terry herself had actually driven within just about 5 miles of the gravesite during her own search for her children, and she stated, quote, "Overall, there's a sense of release. It's almost been like a ball and chain that we had to carry with us. That was part of our life that we didn't know. It's just been this unbelievable burden not having them found. And so that does feel like somewhat of a relief. It's tough, but it's better than not knowing where they are."
Yeah.
Terry had also said that when she was informed that the two children's bodies were found, or two children's bodies, you know, just, hey, we found two kids.
Right.
We haven't identified them yet. She said that she knew it was her children before they confirmed of the identities because she was told that one of the bodies had braces on their teeth and she knew that this was Philip.
Yeah.
Stephanie herself is a mom to a son and a daughter. They're 2 years apart at the time of the discovery. Her son was 21 and the daughter was 23. Mm. So kind of close in age-ish, yeah. Like years apart and the girl being older,
yeah,
than, you know, Sarah and Philip.
Yeah.
And even though she had never done anything like this before, like, she, it's not like she's been an armchair detective, you know, like, trying to solve other cases.
Yeah.
She just was very drawn to this case specifically. She said that she basically memorized transcripts of Manny's description that she found on a website. She bought her own supplies and several times a week would head off in her car with shovels, mud boots, a flashlight, and a pickaxe to try and find some answers. She stated, quote, "I'd give away many of my work hours as I could. I couldn't focus at work." Stephanie said that she went to 6 or 7 spots again and again and again, bringing with her dog Rico, who was a Rottweiler boxer mix. Mm. She would also sometimes drag her husband out there or a few friends. And she said she didn't want anyone else to think that she was crazy because everyone's like, "Stephanie, what are you doing? Like, why are you giving up work shifts and wandering around in the woods looking for these children's bodies? Like, we have no idea where they even are." And she was like, it would just be so satisfying almost for us to find these bodies and my husband be there, my friends be there, so I can look at them and be like, "I'm not crazy, I told you so." Like, I had a feeling they'd be out there.
Yeah.
And on the day of the discovery, Stephanie said that Rico, her dog, kept going back to this one spot in the woods. And this one spot was under a tree with branches hanging down, almost like a willow tree. And she reported this to police, and she was like, hey, like, this spot, I just have a feeling, my dog is really into it. And they're like, yeah, we'll check it out, we'll check it out. And then she's like, all right. And so she went back to the spot, expecting to see police there, and they weren't.
Yeah.
So she's like, fuck it, I'm going in, like, I just have a feeling about this. Yeah. So she's digging with her shovel, and sure enough, about a foot and a half deep into the dirt, she uncovered a trash bag.
Yeah.
The bodies were also near bell-shaped concrete sewer connectors. There was a fence and a wood pile nearby and 6 feet tall grass. Just a lot of the things about the cryptic description Manny gave police were there at this spot.
Yeah.
And what's really incredible is that Stephanie did not know Terry. Mm-hmm. She didn't really even know her name until she heard it on the news. Like, yeah. Oh, that's the mom whose children I've been looking for.
Mm-hmm.
She just felt really compelled to look. She never reached out or tried to contact Terry. She wanted to leave her alone, give her space, and just kind of do her thing. And she also said that she didn't want Terry to know that she was searching because she didn't want to disappoint her.
Oh.
She said she was just so taken with the story that she knew she had to help in any way she could. And I feel like her gut instinct or just something was what kept her going. Yeah. Like, she never got discouraged. It took her 6 months.
Wow.
And Terry ended up visiting Stephanie and brought a dog bone for Rico.
Very nice.
And there's a photo up on our website of Stephanie being handed a certificate from a member of the FBI for her excellent work in, you know, solving this case, essentially, and discovering the bodies. And in the picture is Terry Knight helping to award her with the certificate from the FBI.
It's awesome. It's very awesome. So, Sarah and Phillip's remains were cremated, and Terry was able to bring them home. She flew out to Ohio to get them, of course, and finally they were able to come home after 2 years of being missing and, of course, presumed murdered. You can only trust so much that Manny had said, and then once he killed himself, how much is true, you know, until you find them. So, finally, after all that time, she had an answer, and God bless that woman for finding them. That is a wonderful, wonderful woman, and a lot of effort that she did not have to do by any means. So good on her.
I know. It's so cool that she just felt, like, she just felt it in her gut. Like, I know they're out here. I'm going to find them.
Yeah.
You can all say I'm crazy. I'm at work and I just can't focus on work. I need to go find these kids. Yeah. And she never bothered Terry about it.
Yeah.
She just, like, bought her own supplies, took her dog out. It's really, it's so incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. And that is the terribly disturbing story of the evil Manuel Garing and the murder of his two beautiful children, Sarah and Philip, who obviously deserved so much better than this piece of shit father. What an awful, awful man.
If you guys want to know a bit more about this case, there is an episode of the series Evil Lives Here. It is season 8, episode 3, where Terry Knight herself talks about the case. I do not have cable, so I was not able to watch it, but I was able to catch a couple clips here and there, like on YouTube or TikTok, so I definitely want to find a way to watch this. You guys should check it out.
Mm.
And of course, that episode Criminal, the podcast by Phoebe Judge. It is called Finding Sarah and Philip, and in that episode, she interviews Stephanie, who was the woman who found their bodies.
I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is Criminal. You know, she's great. She does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And while we will never be criminal, we do want to know what you think about, not the podcast Criminal, but this case in our episode here, talking about Sarah and Philip and the evil, evil Manuel Garing. You can find us on Instagram at truecrimene.
All lowercase.
And you can send us an email at truecrimene@gmail.com.
We also have a website, truecrimene.com, under our contact page. You could go to our handy-dandy submission tool. That is a great way to be anonymous, but you can also leave your name. You can send us your thoughts on this case, other cases we've covered, even though I don't think any other case that we've covered is anything quite like this.
Yeah.
You can send us questions, comments, concerns. You can send us case suggestions, cases based in New England, please. If you leave your name, we will give you a little shout out at the top of the episode. Thank you again to Julie D for suggesting this case to us.
Thanks, Julie D.
And yeah, we really appreciate you guys being here and listening, especially for cases like this. Even though it is solved, it is still important to talk about.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.